Welcome to Long Story Long. I'm your host, Lisa Curry. Today's guest is the hilarious comedian and actor, Matt Bronger. Matt is the host of the podcast This Might Help with Matt Bronger. It's a call-in show. I recommend you call in. And he's also the co-host of Hey Girl with Kyle Kinane, who's another hilarious comedian. And they actually have a Hey Girl Live coming up on April 24th that I think you should check out. We had a really great conversation, and it was super fun and funny, and you're really going to enjoy it. Here you go.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Lisa?
Good. So great to see you. You're in LA right now. Obviously, you're home. What are you working on right now?
Well, raising a child badly. I mostly just watch my 7-month-old girl full time and write when she naps. So I have a couple projects I'm writing with friends. One I'm concentrating the most on, and then just trying to develop jokes for when I go back on the road later this year. And but that's kind of mostly the focus, I guess.
Yeah, I would say, by the way, that you're raising your child well, because you're one of the only people that covers up her face when you post.
yeah. I mean, I always think of like Tom Segura and Christina Pazinski. Like, you never ever see their kids in any of their stuff.
Yeah.
And they could definitely use their kids if they wanted to, because they have such a massive platform, you know? And I was always like, And I remember talking to him about it and some other people. And it's like, you know, I think she's an adorable kid, but at the same time, I'm like, at this point, you know, and it's also throws social media into sharp focus for me in a lot of ways. Cause I mean, I feel like we all have at least most people older than 30 have a little bit of chip on their shoulder because of social media, mostly because like I'm not that good at it. Like, my wife is so much better than at it than me. But it is that thing where I go, well, wait, why do I want to put her on here? Oh, because she's absolutely gorgeous and she's a beautiful, cute kid. You know, that, I mean, she looks like, the thing she gets told, we hear a lot, is that looks like a doll. That doesn't look like a baby. You know, like, she looks like the Gerber, like the old school Gerber baby. And though it's that thing where it's like, it's not that it's objectification.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, if I take a picture of myself or someone a selfie, it's just like, whatever. But it's like, when it's your kid.
It's like you're already getting enough attention for.
It would just be attention for me. You know what I mean? It's my, and I'm sure as hell not going to make her own Instagram thing. You know, if you're your parent, you want to do that. Great. It's fine.
I love that stuff.
Judging you.
Yeah.
You
know? There's other friends of mine that put up their baby. I'm like, more baby content, please.
Absolutely.
But like, also
it's healing. It is healing, but it's just, I'm torn, man. I'm so torn. Cause I do send pictures of her to friends and they're like, oh my God, I needed this. And it's like, great. That's cool. You know, but just to go back, the reason why I said I'm grazing her badly is because she fell off the bed when my back was turned.
Oof.
And she's fine. But it's like, that was my first experience with that personally, where with my wife and I have both seen her. Like, we couldn't reach her. She said, boop, boop, but she flipped off this bed and we were like on a trip. But this one was like, it's now that point where I'm like,
she just falls off the bed constantly now.
No, this is the weirdest reference, but I feel like you grew up watching, you grew up watching like action movies, right?
A little bit. Yeah.
A little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause, like, have you seen the movie The Rock with,
I have
Sean
not
Connery?
Seen The Rock.
Okay. So there's a scene. Mm-hmm. No. Very specific, but there's a scene where the way this guy escaped from Alcatraz was there's these blasting furnaces and he has to like roll, roll, stop, like on his side. Okay. I put her in the middle. We have a California King. It's enormous. It's a big bed. Middle of the bed. I turned to grab something. She went, foo, 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 foo. She like flew.
She had something to do. She had to go somewhere.
She just had this feeling of like, fuck this bed, and went, and it was just like, thump, like she landed on her back, you know, fell maybe like a foot and a half and like bonk on her head and just crying. And I picked her up and my wife runs and she's like, what happened? She's like, I heard that in my office. And I was like, oh God, you know, and she has a 96 percentile size head. Like, it's a 90, her head is bigger than 96% of all children in the world. Yeah. For her age. So it's a nugget. And she's fine. There wasn't even a bump.
So there's a hole in your floor now.
But you have, right. Yeah. But there's that, you just have that feeling of she's dead, you know, or like, and it's not, but you know, it's fine, but it's just that You know, I'm shook. I'm on this call with you, shook as fuck.
So absolutely.
I'm getting better. You know, we spent some time together, me and the baby. She spent some time with her mom. Yeah. All's cool, but it's like,
no more trust falls.
No, that's why I jokingly said I'm raising her badly. That's the whole reason.
Yeah, of course. I bet like you must be absolutely dying to get back on the road too. You have some stuff lined up later this year?
I do. I think my earliest, I have a tentative in August, but then everything else is in October on. Mm-hmm. So it's all, I specifically was like, because I just didn't know when I was going to get the vaccine. I specifically was like, let's not get anything until fall. But now that I actually got the vaccine, my first shot last week, just lucked out completely by just, you know, totally scamming and taking a minority nurse's spot. I walked into a pharmacy 10 minutes before they closed and was like, hey, do you guys have any extra? And the pharmacist was like, yeah, and was like, I'm glad you asked. We open these vials
for
one person, two people. Yeah. It was a thing where I was like, oh, and I called my wife and we got the shot and we were like, you know, borderline weeping in the car.
Yeah, of course. What a huge relief.
They were like, you should buy a lottery ticket because this doesn't really happen. And I'm like, I feel like I already won. I don't want to push it. You know, I'm not going to be like, you know, this is a sign. It's like, no, this is what I've been worried about. Cause so now
absolutely.
I might do something this summer if I can get it. But like the big push has already pretty much happened where, because everyone got their stuff moved from last year and there are names far bigger than me that are getting their spots pushed out by names bigger than them. You know what I mean? So it's like this. So, you know, I'm lucky I'm happy I've got some and maybe I'll get some more. So,
It feels like the only real trickle down economy is like comics grabbing spots from other comics who cancel.
Totally.
That's all there is. Yeah. And you released an album last year.
I did.
How lucky did you feel to be able to have something, to put something out in the midst of all this bullshit when it's like, you can't go on the road?
Well, you know, I'm blanking. Did it come out at the beginning of last year or the year before that? I'm like fucking.
I'm going off of online, so no, I don't know. I did. Online I could I, be wrong.
I have. I. This is how cracked my brain is right now. I just.
I think
have to
also
look it
nobody
up.
Knows what year last year was. Like when we say last year, some people are talking about 2017 at this point. No one knows what last year is.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to look it up. Even if it was, it's like to have something, because I was going to shoot a special in April of last year. Oops.
So that's,
boom. Yeah. I remember talking to Michelle Buteau and she was like, girl, I shot mine a week before it all went away and it just won a Grammy, you know, which is
so
dope.
Wow. That's
like,
so lucky.
Or no, Emmy?
I have no idea. I love Michelle. She's great, but I don't know what she won.
She tied with Jerry Seinfeld. Like they gave it to
Whoa.
Yeah. So it's like, but she, you know, like it'd be funny if I'm like, and mine could have. No, like, but I was just so happy for her that she got, but it was just luck of the draw.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's, I'm assuming that's something that you're gearing up to then film once we get back to things.
Yeah. It'll take some doing. I mean, I did a long outdoor set. I did like almost an hour and, you know, I did well, but it was that thing where it was like being in a play and going, oh, what the fuck is my next line?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Absolutely.
Oh, God, just stop my heart right now. Oh, now I remember. And that happened so many times with the stuff that was new. And I'm just like, oh, this is still just I'm playing with. But the stuff that I want to keep in that hour, I was just like, whew, like so rusty.
Yeah. It is crazy how quickly some of that goes away. Just like little tags and things. You know, you haven't been doing the Zoom shows, have you?
Some, not a ton. I mean, the thing is, it's like, it's kind of, I've always compared stand-up to therapy in that even when I don't want to go, I'm always glad I did.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
But now it's even more, it's, you know, it's going to suck, but you still should do it. And you're glad you did. You know, it's that thing where it's like, you know, I was talking to Kanane about this. We're like, yeah, it's going to suck, but you got to do it.
Absolutely.
You know? It's just because it for a while it was all that was there, you know, and they don't, you know, saying they all suck is, it's true, but it's also,
it's what we have right now.
And they're doing them much, 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 much better than they did when this all started.
Yeah.
Like, they're so much better now.
Absolutely. I've done a handful as myself as well. And the one thing with the Zoom shows is I feel like if a bit doesn't go, it really doesn't go on Zoom. It's not like there's no wiggle room. You're like, oh, I can never say those words again in any order.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I did a bit on Hot Tub where I was just reading I wrote this whole thing about the screaming men of the sweaty wrestle pit event was mm-hmm. canceled. And it's just a thing where a bunch of guys get in a pit and they're all like no shirts and they're screaming at each other's faces and they wrestle. And I'm mad that it got canceled. And part of it was I pulled my shirt off and uh-huh. I didn't realize that per Twitch's regulations, you can't uh-huh. show nipples.
Oh,
because because they're like, oh, no topless women. And then there'd be topless men. And then there would also be, like trans women who identify mm-hmm. as women, but they don't have, you know, the parts that would ordinarily be blanked out. And,
right.
you know, it's a thing where it's like, so they just had to go no nipples.
Yeah.
I did not know this. And so the chat's blowing up with all like other comments. Put your shirt on. You're going to make a shot.
And you start like tweaking your nipples and they're like, no, stop. And you're like, I don't have time to read the chat. I'm just going to keep going.
And I'm like, oh, you can see me. Like I'm that New York Times guy who was like,
oh, Jeffrey Toobin.
Thank you.
I mean, it's like, who hasn't masturbated on a Zoom on accident entirely? Obviously.
How do you, it's like, you know, you talk to your mom on FaceTime and it's the camera's just up her nose or something, like,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
This is a gross angle, mom, move it. But like, what you're doing. You're just, it's just like.
Yeah, absolutely. At the very least, you knew you were on a call or about to be on a call, or the work was within an hour vicinity of where you're at right now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe put your computer in another room entirely.
I remember I did an interview once, all audio. Mm-hmm. And I went and I tried to sneak out a pee. Like I went to the bathroom. I had to go so bad, but it was like, I didn't want to be rude.
Yeah.
But it's like, just say, can I call you back? Put the interview on pause. Cause I went and did it. And he was like, hey, did you just pee? And I was like, yeah. I was like, could you hear it? And he was like, no, you just sounded different. You could tell by the sound of my voice.
That's hilarious.
So it's like, you know, not that.
You're like, on the call.
I don't have that thing where I need to masturbate if I'm online. I don't, you know, thankfully. Yeah. But like, you know, that was one of those things. Like, but if it's, a little, I don't get it. I don't get it.
That was hilarious. So when you've been doing comedy for a while and are very good. And
thank you.
When you were growing up, like, did you know you wanted to be a comic?
I always was kind of, I was always a class clown. I wanted to be an actor. I was like mm-hmm. in love with acting. I used to watch the Oscars when I was a kid and I loved doing.
Really?
I did a play. I did plays in grade school. I did plays in middle school. I did plays and musicals all through high school and ended up going to a small liberal arts college mm-hmm. in White Plains in Purchase, New York, in Westchester County, and would, you know, go see productions in the city and stuff when I could and kind of had that thing. But once you kind of realize what you're good at, mm-hmm. you should respect it, you know, because I was always good at cracking a joke. I was always good at my mother's very funny. My dad's very funny and dry. And so like I was always funny in class and stuff. And it's like, yeah, decent actor, but is that my best thing?
Yeah.
You know, and absolutely. There have been times the reason why I say, you know, don't lean into what you're good at and don't be ashamed of it is because I would go out for some of these parts, you know, in adulthood and try to actor them up, you know, and uh-huh. try to, you know, not put myself into it. And now and some of them were like, oh, this dude is just a henpecked husband or whatever, mm-hmm. or this dude is a loser or whatever. And not realize it's just kind of like, you can make that part great, but you don't have to actor it up. Like I remember my wife is always mm-hmm. the realist with me. She'll always say the realest shit. And it's one reason I love her, but she's like, honey, I'm going to be honest with you. You're not Christian Bale. And I'm like, you're fucking right. I'm not. I should not be making up a voice for this. Yeah. You should have my voice. You know?
There is just like something when you are, I feel similarly where I really liked acting, but people know when if you don't like have it in your bones or something like.
Yeah. Or you're, you know, like I would never want Daniel Day-Lewis's life, you know, that level of commitment to a part.
Yeah. That's a lot.
You know, there was that story about Marathon Man with Dustin Hoffman and working with Laurence Olivier, where Dustin Hoffman was like staying up all night before they shot. So he would be on set and be a wreck and be shaking and pale and sweating. And, you know, the big, like, you know, line was Laurence Olivier would be like, "My dear boy, have you tried acting?" You know, which is like, yeah, but kind of a dick thing to say. And ironically, Daniel Day-Lewis had a great point where he's like, well, that speaks more about Laurence Olivier's disdain for the art than it is for, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's kind of, they're kind of both right.
Yes.
And I'm not going to do that. You know, yeah. It would depend on the project, but I don't think I'd be good. I don't think I'd be good if I was, you know, I would see these actor intensives. And after college, the head of the drama department was like, you should do a Shakespeare intensive. You should do this intensive. It'd be like almost like getting your master's, but it takes like 2 years and you just nothing but Shakespeare for 2 years. And I was like, I love Shakespeare, but that sounds like
emotional
death to me. You know, and ironically, I ended up going to Chicago, trying to break into the theater scene there and, you know, wasn't, to be honest, trying that hard, but got into improv more, and then got into doing these kind of smaller stand-up shows. And then that became my path, which I think served me far better than if I would have been your actor's actor.
Yeah,
I just
absolutely.
Don't necessarily think that's my
Where did
my
you study
route.
Improv at?
At IO, at Improv Olympic.
That's so fun.
It was there. And at The Annoyance. I did a year at The Annoyance too. I did a show or two in the Skybox at Second City, but that was with other Second City people, but it wasn't a Second City production. But it was interesting to get kicked off my improv team because I took levels 1 through 5. That's all you're supposed to take. And then they added a sixth. And I'm like, I don't want to take it.
Like,
and
I just, it's just another $550 or whatever.
And they're like, you can intern. It's like, what, lift kegs? No, I'm not going to do that. I work in a bar. And then my coach called me and was like, yeah, you're off the team. But they said, if you take level 6, they'll put you back. And I was just, I'd started doing stand up there. And that was my moment. Like where I was like, nah, I'm like, I'm just a stand up now. Like where I was kind of like, you know, where I joked that like my lightsaber turned from green to red. Like I went to the dark side and threw my hood up, you know, to be dramatic as hell about it. Cause in Chicago at that time, I mean, it was Hatfields and McCoys. Improv hated stand up and stand up hated.
It is really crazy how divisive it is in Chicago. Cause I'm like, I don't know. We can all be friends. We're all doing comedy. And they're like, absolutely not.
Yes. No. And it's, and they, both sides have points. I understand both sides, but it's better than it is way better than it was. Cause even, you know, Second City, even they put a stand up club in their thing, you know, there will always kind of be cats and dogs without it.
Absolutely. What got you to make the move into stand up?
Oh, just doing open mics and then falling in with the crew I did with like John Roy and Kyle Kinane and Mickey Betancourt and Kamel and Emily DeRizes and all these people who were we would all do the show called The Lion's Den. It was an open mic on Mondays that you would sign up and it'd probably be like 50 comics and we always wanted to do a new 5 minutes. I remember we used to make fun of John Roy because he would do the same joke a couple times over like weeks. And he was the only guy playing comedy clubs.
And he's like, I'm just working on them. That's what you do.
And he would say, he would be like, and he would make enough to have like a used car, which none of us had. And like Kyle had this massive Grand Marquis. It was
hilarious
that we would drive through the snow, took shows together in. But like, you know, he would be like, yeah, have fun at your jobs, guys. This is like the ultimate put down. Like, you know. But that show was so awesome. And I remember they would ring this bell. And if the bell rang, your name wasn't on the list. I remember getting there a minute too late and just feeling like garbage. And like just being so mad at myself. But, you know, everybody would go up. There was a night where like George Carlin stopped by.
That's crazy.
And there was like a guy who would get up there and just eat VHS tapes. And there were like...
What?
There was a, it would be all kinds of stand up, really good, really bad, whatever. But the thing about it, like with CJ Sullivan and Nate Craig and all those people, it's like there was such a hilarious combination of irreverence, of just like, kind of like, well, I'm going to talk about anything I want. I want to be different, but also kind of an idea of like, but none of us are shit. You know, like nobody, I remember thinking when I was doing improv, oh, there's a road that this can lead to a job like Saturday Night Live or, you know, something else. Stand up, never saw it until I kind of came to LA and started learning how the business worked. Yeah, because it was just a thing we really, really loved doing. And it was, and we would, you know, get super hammered and like, and everything, but like we did it because we loved it, but also because it was really fun and we didn't have to think about it that much. And it was, you know, it's still like such a thrill to think about writing a thing and being like, ooh, I'm gonna do this tonight, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, I, you know, and you would make fun of stuff that had gone before you. You know, I remember there's one night where for some reason there were a bunch of attractive women in the audience and you're like, they were just open mic or something. And I think I said something stupid, like someone broke the lock on the hot girl cage or something. And then every one of these dorks like me are just commenting on it. And Kyle gets up and was like, you fucking nerds. You've never seen women. And I remember I was falling off my chair laughing because it was just like every guy thought it was such an interesting thing. But we're making these women feel uncomfortable by complimenting them. Like, just shut up. You know, but it was like that. And I remember last, I feel like I'm piling on, but last thing I'll say is I remember I used to have a bit about it. I learned mm-hmm. that a spoken heckle is so much worse than a yelled one, because when a person's setting up a joke, it's quiet. You know, if it's going, mm-hmm. if the room is good or decent or whatever, or normal. And so like, I forget what this comic said. He said something like, men and women are different, you know? And someone at the back, it might've been Kyle. he wasn't always a dick, but somebody was like, fuck you. And he's like, hey. And it was like a laugh. He's like, listen, go fuck yourself. And he didn't even say it that loud. It was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself. And like in the silent, and it crushed because it was such a... The setup was so garbage.
Because it was just like the precision of the timing of hitting
in the silence. Fuck you.
It is so much worse too, because it's like, if you yell it, you're yelling over presumably sometimes laughter. So like, maybe you're the asshole. But if it's quiet enough that you can hear somebody just speaking it, yikes.
Yes. Oh, so bad. So bad.
Oh man, that is, that's really funny. It's funny to me that you saw a clear career path with improv versus stand-up, because I felt the complete inverse where I started improv at Second City and I was like, what am I going to do? Perform on their boat and that's it?
Right.
You know, but because I think that I also was never somebody that like looked to SNL. I was like, well, that's something I cannot do. So that's not, I'm just going to cross that off the list, you know? Well,
I will say that I never thought I would, mm-hmm. but this is how thirsty everybody was, you know, that it's almost like how I remember New York comics being like, people having a stereotype of like, New York comics just do it for the art. And it's like, mm-hmm. what? They want to be fucking rich and famous as much as
every one of us does. Yeah.
Every one of us. It's like, stop, man. It's not different because it's the fucking edgy city. Like, stop. Uh-huh. With that. And people talked about Chicago that way. But I remember a dude showed up once, and thank Christ I wasn't on this team, mm-hmm. but he's like, he just called himself a producer and they were like, oh, and they put him in the front row. And like after the show, he's like, I want to see everyone backstage. And he had everyone. And he was like, I'd like to talk to you, and you, the rest. Thank you. Great job. You could leave the room. And I heard the story and everyone who left the room wanted to kill themselves.
No.
They didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
He had no, like, here's my business.
He's just some guy who said he was a producer. It's a prank.
Just some dude that wanted to fucking, you know, have a power, you know, show a power play of some stupid prank. Yeah. But like, I remember hearing that and just feeling like someone walked over my grave, because I mm-hmm. knew if I was there and a dude kicked me out of the room, I would just want to end my life. You know, I would feel so small. We were doing stand up in these stupid bars mm-hmm. and it was so funny. And it's still, I look back and go, man, a lot of that comedy still really holds up, holds up.
Absolutely.
Another one. Like I remember being at the Cubby Bear, and I'm just going to say one more heckle. Yeah, this was Kyle. This dude's on stage. This is how far, how long ago this was. Cause mm-hmm. someone literally fucking said this on stage. He goes, I just don't get faggots, you know? And Kyle, leaning on the bar in the silence, goes, mm-hmm. best comedian ever. And the crowd just cracked up. And the dude thought for a moment, he was like, yeah, hey. And then it hit him. Everyone hated him.
Oh my God, Kyle is the best.
And I should say that guy looked like you would think he'd be friends with Kyle because he had like a chain wallet.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
You know, a goatee or something. Yeah. And he was like, you know, wearing a mechanic's jacket.
Yeah,
like,
this is now an indictment of Kyle. Comedian. Yeah.
But just like, it's, you're just like, A, Kyle doesn't think that way. B, his sister's a lesbian. Fuck off the stage, man, you know? So yeah, anyway.
That's so funny. Back to the producer thing. I think it is wild how in entertainment, and I feel like it doesn't matter what area of entertainment, there could be a job or an opportunity that you've never heard of, that never seemed to exist before, that's something that you wouldn't even be interested in. And, but once the opportunity materializes and presents itself, it's like, well, I have to get this now. And it's like, what the fuck is wrong with all of us? That this is like, I just found out that I didn't get a job that I didn't want. And I was so sad. And then I was like, what the, I don't even want this job. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, everything is the brass ring that you'll never get again, which is insane.
Yes.
You know, my therapist was talking, I was down in the dumps a couple weeks ago about things because I come very close to a few things. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, like it's that thing where you're like, I just want to win. And I didn't say that, but he was kind of like, he's like, look, I don't like comparing clients to, you know, like to other clients, but I have people who, he talks to a lot of actors, a lot of performers. He's like, who are very successful, who are fucking miserable.
Yeah.
They are so sad about their lives and stuff. And so a thing,
and he's
about,
like, but they're rich and famous, so get it together, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please say that.
What's it? Not that I'll ever quote Ari Gold on Entourage ever again. But one thing that he said that made me laugh so hard was like, happy? Who the fuck is happy? Look at me, I'm miserable. That's why I'm fucking rich. You know, it's that thing where it's like, and that's really it. That's really it. Where people are just like, yeah, but I think I'd rather just try to be near suicidal and have $1 million, you know?
Yeah.
But in the end, you know, I mean, it's just like, I got a great little family here and, you know, the career thing is up and down, but not that you have to have a family or even someone that you're in a romantic partnership with, but you got to be okay with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, like you got to have something in your life that isn't just, if you build everything around this godforsaken river of clowns, it's so like, much as I love it.
Yeah.
You got to have more.
Especially like, I think that's more apparent after this past year where, you know, I see friends of mine that are like, I've got to do all these open mics on Zoom. And I'm like, no, man, you don't. Go camping. No. Go see your family. Yeah. What are you doing? You need oxygen is what you need.
Yeah. I still will go, wait, fuck, how old am I? Oh my God. You know, it just blows my mind. Cause that's time. Time is just, it's just, like, you know, and you'll just turn around and you're like, oh shit. And I not that I wasted it all chasing that stuff, but just. Mm-hmm.
But it's also, you know, in all of the things that you're chasing, you do accomplish a great deal. I mean, you have several albums, you've been on TV a bunch.
Sure. But, you know, I will say, I just saw like Vulture put out like the top 32 character actors working today. And I'm like, I know I'm not on that fucking list. Fuck that list. I hate it.
Those fucking lists.
But it's still that thing where you're like, oh my God, did I just get yoked by a list?
Yeah.
To me, it's almost like, you know, Paul Newman getting hustled in The Color of Money by Forrest Whitaker. And he's like, what the fuck? I just got, like, I'm the hustler. How did I get hustled?
Yeah.
To me and my still getting hooked by a list, which is what they're kind of supposed to do. It's like, oh, Jesus. It's and I only saw it because, like, you know, my wife works with Aparna, who, like, I'm amazing friends with. And I'm like,
yeah. She emailed it to you. She was like, look what you're not on.
Exactly. You know, I think you and I both know Aparna gets all my fucking roles.
Yeah.
We're the same type.
Yes.
No, but it's just, it was momentary. And I was like, whatever. But in the end, I'm more happy for her because, you know, I always joke like that I've discovered all of Kara's clients, which isn't true.
Yeah.
You know, but that was one. We did a show in DC, the Benson Ball. We went to Oliver Reed Hospital and we performed for people in the waiting area. And I was just, I came home. I was like, you should look into her because she's kind of green, but her jokes are incredible.
She's great. She's so good.
You know what I mean? I do have that. Hey, That's my discovery. That's my kid.
You got that as a talent. That's another thing to put on your resume. When you were, after like establishing yourself in Chicago, did you go to New York or did you go straight to LA?
LA, because I had gone to college outside New York and I always had that, I had friends who were living in tiny apartments and I was like, I can't, I'll lose my mind. And so I also had that thing where I was turning 30 and I was like, I just think I should go. I think I've done enough prep time in Chicago, which I always advise people to go someplace and just work out for a couple of years. Not too many. I might have done too many, but I just needed to get someplace where I could do what I wanted to do, which is, you know, get on camera and stuff. And you know, at the time, New York, it felt a lot more like just plays, which I love.
Yeah.
But it's just, I just was like, you know, and more of my friends were going to LA too. So it was kind of like, okay. And I'm just much more of a West Coast guy. I just kind of always have been.
Yeah, that kind of makes it easier if your friends are already going. Did you have a plan with a bunch of people to come out or?
No, just, well, Kyle and I were moving out together. I was going to go, I came here first and lived and couch surfed for like 2 or 3 months. And then he came out and found us a place and we lived, I lived with Kyle for 2-3 years, I think 3 years. Yeah. And then I got this godforsaken one bedroom that I lived in for 6 years. And it still makes me go, why do you live there in that hovel? But that was kind of like my fully scumbag years.
Yeah. I think that that's just also part of, you know, growing and moving. Everyone has to live one place where they're like, what the fuck was that?
Totally.
What was that time in my life? Yikes.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think with most men, I needed to have a steady lady in my life to go, oh, this is horrible, you know, and you should do this and you should do this. And you're like, oh, shit, you know?
So. Yeah. Like, I didn't notice all of these things. How did you find LA? Like once you got there, I mean, like, was it easy for you to navigate and get things going?
It was just an enormous nightmare because it was so big. I didn't know where I was going. Back then, you didn't have GPS. We just had the Thomas Guide, the book.
I had one of those when I moved out.
Yep.
And, unbelievable.
And I worked as a PA for a couple years, and it actually was great because the boss would let me like go to auditions and stuff and not tell anybody.
Oh, that's excellent.
Fuck. Saved my life. And then after that, I was a closed captioner for the hearing impaired and they let me leave, but make up my hours on the weekends. So it was, I lucked out, these two day jobs that let me do that. But yeah, I mean, it was that thing where the first year I pretty much hated it because I didn't really understand it. And then after a couple years, I really liked it and I still do. You know,
I think Chicago to LA feels like a particularly hard adjustment. I mean, I grew up just outside of Chicago. And then, you know, you get to LA and you're like, well, I can't put cheese on everything. That's like, you guys just aren't drinking beer constantly. What kind of fucking place is this?
Yeah.
You know, it does feel like a little bit of a crash landing in that way.
Yes. Yes. It was a very Mad Men-esque life for all of us in Chicago, men and women.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was great, but it definitely had that hard transition of going from not driving to you have to drive. You don't have an option. You have to drive.
Yeah.
You know, this is before Uber and all that stuff.
You have to drive and no one's looking at the road, by the way. Have fun.
It's full on road warrior out here.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. It's crazy. When you look back on, you know, kind of your path through things, is there anything that looking back was either like felt negative at the time or felt insignificant that changed the trajectory of things for the positive for you?
Oof, boy, probably getting kicked off the improv team, you know, anytime you're rejected. When I got into I used to work with some people, some representatives who were not great and not happy with me. And like, we reached an impasse and parted ways, but it was like, they hit me up about it in a shitty way. And it made me go, I fucking hate you. But then it's like, oh, do you want to work with those people though? You know? But you know, number one would probably be when Kara and I were working together and fucking,
always a great combo. I mean, I'm so glad it worked out for you guys.
I was like, I was a walking lie because I lied to all my friends about it going on. Mm-hmm. I lied to her about what it meant to me. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't the best guy. And we reached a point where we break up and get back together. And like, she at one point said, I can't work with you. You have to decide if you want to be with me, but I can't work with you. And it felt shitty. And I'm still, honestly.
So that was the shitty manager that you hated.
Yes. Okay. That's what I'm talking about. Teasing. And I called her them.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's a few people or non-binary.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. But I still, with respect to my managers now, they're great, but she's still like the best person I've worked with. And it was one reason we clicked so well. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was in kind of a careerish slump and I wasn't writing my best stuff. And I was like, well, this is the end of, like, I'm kind of fucked. And also I don't want to be with you, blah, blah, you know? Yeah. And, you know, it's the thing where the thing I regret is how I treated her that whole time. Mm-hmm. But when we started talking again later that year, after not being around each other, not working together, and started talking as people that were not, did not have business with each other whatsoever, we were like the best parts of each other.
Yeah.
So as much as the process sucked and I look back on that and winced through so much shit, if anything would have been different, you know, I kind of believe in the butterfly effect. If
Absolutely,
anything would have
too.
Been different, we probably wouldn't have, Rose, or we'd have a different shittier baby.
I love the idea that there's an alternate timeline where you two have a horrible baby.
I mean, I have people that are like, are you sleeping? My baby's 6 months old. I haven't had any sleep. And I'm like, my kid sleeps 10 hours a night.
That's amazing.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's a miracle.
You know, for the most part, you can like, I should say anyone can hold her, but that's not true because we did like a drag queen bingo thing for a friend of mine online on Saturday. And it was 80s themed. And I put on a headband with a fake mullet. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hi, Rose. And she lost her mind. She's like, who the fuck are you with this long
hair? Maybe she hates the 80s.
And I pulled it up. Maybe that's it. Yeah. She can, Theo Vaughn can.
Past life stuff. Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, absolutely. Theo. No mullets. None. No, but it was like, so we wouldn't have Rose. And it's yeah. So that, you know, it's a thing where it's like, I remember that being such a rock bottom for me. And that the 8 months after we broke up were for the most part pretty freaking miserable. And I felt detached from everybody and myself. And I was still trying to go through the motions and still trying to date. And I just felt hollow and shitty. So much so I didn't even talk to people besides my therapist about it. Like most of my friends did not know I was going through, but it was funny. I'd have people that didn't know me that well be like, you look sad from your Instagram photos. I'm like, oh my God, it's showing through that shit.
You're like, how did you know I was staring directly into the middle distance, just at nothing?
Why, you guys don't rest with a knife against your throat?
It is interesting too. Like when you were talking about the whatever management team that you didn't gel with.
No, they were actually agents, I will say. And that was like, yeah, but they were just, I will say I had come off a bad situation with another agent who I'm actually cool with now and kind of gave me my start. And he's a great guy. It just didn't work. But like I had a massive chip on my shoulder too. So I wasn't the nicest person, but it was like the way they came at me, I was like, wait, what? You know, I won't go into detail.
Yeah.
But like, you know, everyone has those people that they had a bad thing with them. Like it's funny, like the best advice you can give anyone in this business is just be nice.
Yeah,
just be
absolutely.
Nice. And because you always remember the people that were shitty to you for no reason.
Yeah.
You know?
And I do think there's also a thing of like, there's 7 billion people on the planet. There are going to be some people that you just don't gel with. And it doesn't mean that you're bad or they're bad or it's just, you know, not a great match and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And there's a comic who I do shows with and we're always very cordial to each other, but I think we just don't care for one another.
Interesting.
And we ran into each other at the grocery store recently and neither of us said anything. And I was like, this is so pleasant. Like we could just ignore each other and it's fine. And we don't have to do this like weird fake thing, but then we'll do a show together and it's fine. You know, I don't know if I'm also not going to say who it is, but
no, nor would I ask.
But that's cool. And that's great that does Kara still manage you then?
No. She had said that. Yeah, she.
And I missed it.
She fired me basically, yeah. To say, and like, but it was like, yeah, that should have happened. And that,
yeah,
I didn't think that our relationship was worthy at the time. And I didn't think it was real, but it was like, I was not in touch with my real feelings. And like, I remember being on the phone with my parents and my dad was like, you sure you don't be together? I mean, you guys have a lot of fun. And I'm like, Dad, you can't base a relationship on that. And he's like, I don't know.
I mean, it's true. You can't base a relationship on fun.
I mean, what else?
Yeah. Yes.
Fun goes deep. You know what I mean? If you're
having fun, absolutely.
That means that you're gelling, you're clicking. But I mean, I really had like at that point, a broken compass that I was following that I was like, this is nothing's going right. And I wasn't going, can you just, you know, try? And it was that thing. It was like, just look before you leap. We got back together. We moved in together. I'd never lived with a girl I dated, even at that advanced age. And then she was like, I want to get married. And I'm like, you know, then I'm going to propose, you know? And then I waited. So it was like my idea.
Yeah.
Then I did.
I love it.
And both those things, I was like so fucking scared because I couldn't see the other side. And that you never see the other side. You just have to jump. You just have to, you know, bet on all, you know, with the thing you believe in the most, and you're never going to be certain, but you do it. And it paid off moving in with her. It paid off getting married to her, and it paid off having a kid with her. Yeah. All three of those stages I was very scared of.
Well, yeah. Cause now you have an Instagrammable baby that you were,
that's beautiful and photogenic. And that is now is the new face.
Commercially viable. Yes.
Of Walmart diapers. I can announce. No, but it's like, it was just, and doing those first two things gave me the courage to do the third, where I was kind of like, I didn't know shit before. Why don't I just try? It's like, it's all about try it. Just try it. And they're like, but there's no going back if I do. Oh, well.
Yeah. That's great. I'm so glad that you have that.
Thanks.
For your special that you're going to shoot, are you planning to record an album as well, like in tandem with that?
I had the whole thing set up. It was all going to be at the Moon Tower Festival at the North Door. The North Door is now gone.
Oh no.
Evidently. I know. So it's like, I don't even have a date now. I don't know when it, you know, so it's like, if anything, I probably would set it up for, I don't know, probably early next year. So I can make it as good as humanly possible, but that's it's still just kind of tentative. I mean, and it's kind of, I thankfully I stopped looking at it in terms of the barometer is you put, because I used to put one out like every 2 years and there are people that, you know, put out like one a year, which God bless. But it's that thing where it's like, there's no, you know, as long as you're working, as long as you're putting stuff out, it's kind of rarefied air that you're that person that can put out stuff consistently and often and still get an audience for it. Like, you know, a lot of people call me the male comedian Taylor Swift. So
I hear this all the time. Yes.
Constantly. No, I just, for some reason, was thinking, I watched that Miss Americana, that documentary about
her. Oh, yeah.
It's fascinating. And it's, there's she makes this really good point where she's just like, only female artists have to stay on this level. You have to reinvent yourself every single time.
Yes.
And it has to blow up every single time. Male artists, they don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Point blank. And I'm like, holy fucking shit. She's right.
It's true. Yeah.
So true. And so I don't need to be that tip top thing. I'm going to consistently try to make the best stuff I can. But, you know, there's a time where I would, this 5-6 years ago, I would have been despondent that I didn't do that special. Just so mad at it. But it's like, why, how does it help if you give yourself an ulcer over something you can't control? And well, also,
it's still there. You're still you. You're still working towards it. It's not like it's gone away forever, you know?
But all of us comedians, it's like we're playing injured. It's like we've had so much time to not be in front of audiences, and you have to. I had a friend who used to do comedy with me back in Chicago, and then he stopped forever and then would want to do like a guest set at the shows. And he, you know, he'd do great, but he'd be like, yeah, I've been practicing my act. And like, oh, because he lives in this like Mayberry town in like Ohio, this small town. I was like, you go to like a local bar or something? He's like, no, just like at home from the mirror. I'm like, God damn it. Like, don't do that.
Man, I can't. That's the hard thing about stand-up is it's, on the one hand, it is entirely within your control. Like, you are in charge of how many open mics you do and how diligently you write and how much of you really care about the craft of it. But then there's this other part where it's like, you're not a singer-songwriter. You can't practice at home. You cannot. I'm sorry. That's just the rule. You know?
You can't. No. Yeah.
Unless maybe you're a musical comic. And then, okay, you can do that at home. You can practice your chords at home.
And that's why people kind of don't like musical comics.
Exactly. I hate them specifically because they're able to practice at home. I'm like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Because they could just write a fucking song with chords in it.
And that's why I hate all professions as well.
Yes. All. Besides mine and mine.
Yeah.
But it is. You have to do it. And I've done two, maybe three shows outdoors. And like, one, I remember just in the middle of the thing being like, wow, thanks, guys. I haven't done this in a long time. And like, got like an applause break where it was just like, it was like a guy who had fallen. He fell off his tractor at one point, shattered both his arms. And then a year later, he does a pull up. And one pull up. It was like that, you know? And I was doing fine, but it was like, whoo. I likened it to a trapeze artist that is just like, is the next break? Oh, got it. You know, like flipping from the thing to thing and just hoping to God you
catch it before you fall. It is also fascinating to see like how much you can feel yourself just not doing well and like floundering and struggling versus what the audience notices. Because it's like, if it's your friends that know what you're capable of delivering, they might be like, ooh, that was rough. But like, I feel like most people, especially, and not to like both blow smoke up your ass, but like, you're so good at what you do that I feel like
you
coming down a couple of notches is as good as a lot of people are.
I will say a lot of it is in my head and your head and everybody's head when they're on stage. Cause it's just like, once you do it enough, you have to have that. I remember there's a guy who came up to me in a bar in Tampa, of course.
Obviously, like, I would have guessed
like,
that.
He just started talking and he's like undone tie, you know, drunk guy after work. And he's like, so what do you do? And I'm like, I'm a comedian. He's like, ugh, is that rough? How is that? Blah, blah, blah. And I didn't really want to talk to him. And I was kind of getting a little annoyed. Hey, baby. And, I was kind of like, I was like, you know what it is? You kind of just have to not give a fuck. And he was like, what? But it was that thing where I realized, that's part of it is you just have to be like, you know what? You know, not to be like Larry the Cable Guy going, I don't care what you did. I don't care what you think. That shit was funny. Like, you have to have that in you where you're kind of just like, I love this part. I'm just going to friggin' act like it's a tomahawk dunk when you think this is a layup or that misses, you know, like,
you just commit to the bit fully.
And it's not even confidence. It's just not really caring. When you do it enough, you're kind of like, and people are like, they vibe with you and they're like, oh yeah, I do like that. And that did connect with me. But now I feel like I'm the adolescent girl trying to dance sexy, you know, where I'm just like, oh, you're trying, stop it. Stop. Please stop.
That visual.
Please stop doing, you're just trying too hard. Stop.
This is so bad.
We're
all going to go to jail.
You put your lipstick on like a clown.
Yeah.
You know? You don't know what you're doing, you know? And isn't this what boys like? Isn't that what you guys, you know, like, and yeah, I don't mean to hook up or anything. I mean, just like when you're a kid and you go to school and you try to dress cool and you fail miserably.
Yeah.
And I think that part that's kind of in me now more, but at the same time, I'm just like, oh, but whatever, you know, I'm going to go ahead and just be happy failing. And the sets have been good, but it's still just like, they're weird. They're weird.
I imagine driving
home after that last long one, I was like, well, I got out of there alive and I did really well. But it was just like,
when you're working on your sets too, I wanted to ask you, how deliberately do you choose words? I don't know if that's like the right way to say it, but I was like, you know, listening to some more of your stuff again today, not that I had, but just to refresh myself. And I was like, I wish I had written down an example because I can't remember, but you choose such like interesting words in places that are, it's like you're not just saying whatever the thesis of the joke is, you're saying it and adding these specificities that are really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know if you just have this like out there vocabulary that's in your head, or
I have a brain that always goes off on tangents, and if I do the joke enough, the references make sense.
Yeah.
But I remember James Adomian did an impression of me that was so good it hurt my feelings.
That's every impression he does.
Every impression. But he did it for my wife once backstage. And it's just, I keep setting up things and then setting up more things and then say, I never get to the point. And she's like, that's him. And like, I was like, God damn it. But it's that thing where I'm now so conscious of that, but I realize my other stuff is I would do that and go, oh, but I also will mention this, but I'm losing you on this, but I'm coming back to this. And after doing the joke a few times, you could like, okay, now they converge. Now you see what my brain saw at the time, you know? Yeah. But I think it's because of that kind of thinking that made that. And I've always been a fan of really funny lines, like really people that just said a thing that was so descriptive.
Yeah.
And evocative and kind of poetic, you know? I'm trying to find an example, but kind of like that sketch that part from Anchorman where he's, you know, Sex Panther, where they're all just describing how bad it smells, which is originally an SNL sketch that he wrote. Well, it was a bunch of witches that were cooking. Are you going to take it for a walk? Sorry if you can hear squealing with delight right now. That originally was just like, they were just like, what the holy hell are you witches burning up there? And it's all these. And it's so dumb, but it's like, that's the kind of thing that makes me laugh. So if I can have a descriptor like that, or something that shows in the moment what you felt at that time, you know, a lot of my stuff is just stories.
Yeah. And that adds such a good flavor to it. That makes it, you know, unique and more interesting and all of that. One last question. If your childhood self could meet you, like 11-year-old Matt, what do you think he would think?
Jesus Christ. Oh boy. 11? I think 11,
you're like, well, I was in prison when I was 11. So
I was in juvie. I'm trying to think. He had braces and feathered hair.
Oh, yes. So good.
But just like non-intent. Oh, hold on.
Feathered hair like Stevie Nicks, or what are we talking here?
Dave Holmes has described this as my middle-aged lesbian picture. And this is, I think, I
that was, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's perfect. The hair I had right there. Yeah,
you look like my aunt.
Yep, I look like an aunt. you know, I think it would have been like, wait, you have a house. You and your wife have cars. You have you're making a living at this. Whoa, you know.
Yeah.
I've been like, well, I'm that old, and I don't have an Oscar. That kind of sucks. You know, he would be disappointed in a lot less awards, you know, but in the end, it'd kind of be that.
Like 11-year-old, you knew about 30 under 30 or whatever it is, you know,
I think in the end, he would have been like, okay, that's cool. That's cool. And like that I got to do that and would have been like surprised, because it's like he was always the one that was making jokes in school and cracking up the class and stuff. And you never think of that as a job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nor should you, really.
Yeah, absolutely. But, squash that in yourself. But
it can be. I mean, you just burped. You didn't do anything great. Just did a gross
You're going to have to punch it up. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You're really going to have to.
It needs a tag. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, man. It was so great to talk to you.
Oh, you too, Lisa. This is great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. Once again, that was Matt Bronger. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Bronger. His last name, it's Bronger. And I'm Lisa Curry. You can find me on Twitter at Lisa_Curry and on Instagram at OlympianLisaCurry. Listen, guys, if you're enjoying the show, I know you are, please subscribe and go ahead and give me 5 stars and a little review. If you don't like the show and you keep listening to it, that's your problem. Don't give me less than 5 stars. That's not my business. I only care about 5-star reviews, okay? Do you understand me? Please review it, because it gives me more traffic. You know what I'm saying? I really appreciate you. Have a great day, and we'll catch you next week. Bye.